Hello, welcome to the Gab and Jules show. No Gab Marco T, today is on holiday. So look, who's come to be with me on the show? Stuart Robson, thank you so much to be with me.
Always a pleasure, Gab.
Oh, well, what a great weekend of football we've had in Germany, in England, in Spain, everywhere pretty much, some big games in Italy as well, big games, top of the table clashes, everything, a lot of things happen. We've got to start in Spain, of course. It was first against second, Real Madrid against Girona for the big, big game of La Liga. And in the end, there was not much of a contest, really, because Real Madrid were far too good.
Unfortunately, it lasted about 4 minutes, because the first 4 minutes, you thought Girona had all the possession.
They kept the ball well.
They were playing around Real Madrid. Real Madrid didn't play with the centre forward, which was a surprise, because you know we thought that Vinny Jr. was going to play up front alongside Rodrigo. They went to the wide areas. And now, as you looked at it, you thought, well, the furthest forward player is Jude Bellingham. He's going to play in a sort of withdrawn centre forward position. And Girona kept the ball, and then, of course, Vinny Jr. scored. And what a great goal it was, and that changed the game completely.
Was the fact that that goal was super early, was it because it was a world-class goal? Or did you think that anywhere Real Madrid were going to be too strong for this Girona team that have been great, great fairy tale, but that showed their limitations as well in that game?
It did show their limitations, but I think every pundit building up to the game was sort of saying, I think Girona can give them a game here.
Yeah,
they're playing some great football. They can keep the ball. We know that Real Madrid don't always want to play on the front foot. They like to defend that little bit deeper and then play on the counter-attack. And it was all going according to plan. And then Vinny Jr. scores a great goal out the blue.
Yeah.
And you could just see the Girona players, their hearts sank, you know, we've done everything right up until this point, and then we get a goal like that against us. And could it be one of those days? And it was one of those days where everything that Real Madrid did came off.
Yeah, that goal is great from Vinicius Jr. Yeah. Then after that, there's his assist for Jude Bellingham that scored the second. I mean, the run, the outside of the right foot, pass, everything from that second goal showed the class.
You can look at it from two ways. The pass from Vinny Jr. is sensational outside of the boot, which you don't see very often from players these days. The run from Jude Bellingham, who was playing as a attacking midfield player come withdrawn centre forward and makes the run in behind, and his first touch to go past the goalkeeper. What was Eric Garcia doing? How does he not see the run?
How does he not see the run
of Jude Bellingham? And that is where Eric Garcia is at. And that's why Girona will never be the very top, because they've got players like Eric Garcia in their team.
Was that one of the best performances from a Real Madrid team this year? A Real Madrid team, by the way, with no centre-backs, because there's still no Alaba, no Militao, no Rudiger, not even Nacho. So they played Tchouaméni and Carvajal as the two centre-backs. Yeah. Was that one of the best performances this season, you would say?
Yes, because, you know, I've seen Girona cause teams problems with their attacking play, particularly in the wide areas, getting crosses into the box. And we kept on thinking, with Carvajal as a centre-half, surely, and Dovbyk is the centre forward. Surely they're going to get wide, get crosses into the box. Savio down one side and
Tsigankov on the other side.
Kuto the other side. Yeah. And Kuto the other side. You thought they're going to get crosses in. They didn't do that. But Carvajal defended brilliantly when making interceptions and using his, I wouldn't say he's quick, but he's sharp.
Yeah, he's aware.
And Tchouaméni has proved once again he's good in the air. When crosses did come in the box, he headed them out, and I thought he played really well. And so did Lucas Vazquez down the right hand side, stopped Savio playing really. And it was the same with Mendy down the left hand side. It was a really good top class performance, I thought, from Real Madrid.
It was. You felt like at some point watching it, and you were commentating, so you were probably more even deeper in it. But for me, in front of the television, it felt like men against boys. And again, let's take nothing away from a Girona season so far that's been incredible. Yeah. But we kind of always wondered if there would be a point where, not they would be found out, but that they would really struggle. And this is this was a game where Mitchell was suspended, so he was in the stands. They had a couple of big players missing.
Herrera
in midfield, especially. But it really felt a bit like men against boys.
And I don't know if you saw it. You know, I was talking about, you know, you can have all the best individual players, which Real Madrid have got better players than Girona. You can talk about the tactics, and Ancelotti got his tactics right.
Yeah.
But the one thing that stood out for me was the athleticism of Real Madrid as opposed to the lack of athleticism from Girona.
Yeah.
Camavinga was gliding past people with the ball. You know, Vinny Jr. was running past, which he does.
Jude
Bellingham, you know, looked as though he was 3 yards quicker than in thought and physicality than the Girona players. Even Toni Kroos, who's not a great athlete, found space and could just go past that first challenge and hit those big crossfield passes. It was one of the best performances I've seen Real Madrid play. Valverde did well in midfield as well. You know, it was a good all round performance.
And it felt maybe a little bit that the nerves got a little bit to Girona for such a big game and the big clash, and everybody was watching. Jude Bellingham, there's this injury, the ankle injury. Mm. We saw him coming off at the start of the second half, just after the start of the second half for his ankle. It doesn't look too bad in terms of how long he will be out, maybe 3 weeks, maybe slightly more, slightly less. He scored two more goals. So the first one we described there, the second one is a tap in after the Vinicius.
But you have to remember, the second one was after he'd had his ankle injury.
Yeah, true.
He was limping around, and but he was still in the right place at the right time to put
like
it in.
Like a number nine. Like those poachers. Yeah. Are you still impressed with him, even if maybe the last few games he'd been back to a very good level, but not the incredible level that he was at the start of this year?
You can't fail to be impressed by him. Mm. You know, his understanding of the game, you know, playing as a withdrawn centre forward is a difficult role. When do I go back into midfield? Yeah. You know, you know, do I leave their two centre halves with nothing to do? When do I make my forward runs? When do I go and create a 2v1 in a wide area? He did all that superbly. So his football brain is very, very good. His athleticism is very good. He's a much better player now, technically, than I thought he was at Dortmund. When I've seen him play for England. I'm amazed how he can manipulate the ball in tight areas.
Yeah.
He makes the right decision, mainly. And he's an inspirational figure on the pitch. Yeah. You know, other players look to him. The crowd look to him.
Yeah.
The only thing I would say at the moment, he's becoming a little bit tetchy, which I don't think he needs to be. I think he should carry on enjoying his football rather than always seeing as though he wants to have a row with somebody.
Oh, I see what you mean,
A little bit tetchy, you know. And, I don't think he needs to be that. You know, you're playing brilliantly.
Yeah.
Go and be the footballer that you've shown us over the last 2 or 3 years rather than having a row with the referee and a row with the opposition moaning about this and that. He's getting it off Vinny Jr., I think.
Maybe he's still that leadership to get involved and to be pretty much everywhere. I thought he was outstanding again for the 57 minutes he played or whatever. Just on Bellingham's too. So I think he's 16 and 17 goals this season, or 15 and 16 he was in the league. It's just incredible. We've talked already a lot about the impact that he's having on this team, what he's doing to his career. This injury, whether it's 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 2 weeks, whatever, it's an ankle injury. Let's just hope, especially with ankles. I don't know if you ever had an ankle injury when you were playing, but you have to be really careful because sometimes you kind of come back, but then you can easily have a setback.
You have to make sure your proprioceptors are working again, which is the thing that makes you, from your actual ankle turning, your reflexes to make it not turn. It looked, because it wasn't just once, he did it twice in the game.
Right,
so he did it early on in the halfway through the first half. And
he stayed on the floor a little bit.
And he stayed on the floor. Yeah. And when we saw the replay, he thought, that looked bad. We were surprised that he got through that.
Yeah.
And then he slipped in the box and then he caught his ankle again. And that did look a bad one. But hopefully it's only 3-4 weeks. But he's going to have to make sure the treatment's absolutely spot on.
Yeah, to come back. If you're Carlo Ancelotti now, and again, Real Madrid are in a very good position in the league. We will discuss that later. But there's a big Champions League game coming against Leipzig, who are going to be better than Girona, certainly on that day. Do you keep the same formation? That diamond midfield, and you put Brahim Diaz as a 10, for example, and you still have Vini and Rodrigo. Or, as we saw in this game, and as you mentioned already before in the debrief, you put Vini and Rodrigo back as wingers where their natural position is, and you put Joselu as a 9, and then you midfield 3 behind, whether that's Camavinga, Valverde and Cruz, or whoever you want. What would you do?
Well, that's the options he's got. Joselu, I saw play a couple of weeks ago, and he played very well as the main centre-forward. Scored a couple of goals. He was always lively in the box. He has a good touch to take him past a defender. I think it's Hetafe, he played really well against. But I think he will stick with, and he won't play them quite as wide. I think Vinny Jr. and Rodrigo will play sort of inside right for those that remember those positions.
Yeah,
inside right, inside left. And Brahim will play at the top of a diamond in midfield. I think that's what they will play. And I like the fact that Camavinga didn't play as the holding player. Toni Kroos played as the holding player. Yeah. Camavinga, I thought, was...
He's outstanding.
He's outstanding. His pace, how he took defence to attack, was excellent. So I would stick with that. And Valverde on the right-hand side of that midfield diamond, with Vasquez probably in another game getting forward down the right-hand side, getting crosses into the box, and Mendy doing the same down the left-hand side.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it makes sense to just keep that formation that has been working, the system that's been working so well, and that suits Brahim in a way, because I think Brahim could be a very capable number 10, and we've seen him doing well when he played there.
Yeah,
I think now Rodrigo and Vinicius, I've been more used to playing in those positions, which was, and then I think for Camavinga and Valverde, this is the perfect formation as well. I think people have slept a little bit on Camavinga this season, I feel. And maybe because Bellingham has been so good and because Vinny is the star. But I think Camavinga has been outstanding. That's it.
With Camavinga, there's one slight problem I have with it. I don't like him in the holding midfield role.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Because when he's not so good in tight areas.
Yeah.
There's times when the ball gets played into him and he's not aware of players coming around the back of him, and he sort of then gives possession away in a bad area.
Yeah.
And if it gets too tight, he might have the ball nicked off of him. But when he gets in that sort of left-sided midfield in a diamond, and there's space in front of him, and he avoids the first challenge, he goes from there to there so quickly.
So quickly.
And I mean,
he's so strong.
He was powerful, he was quick, he made good decisions. I thought he was outstanding. And he wins the ball back. And I think he's curbed his sort of appetite to go and foul people. You know, he's just
he's
a much learning, better attack.
He's learning how to manage himself, definitely. And he's still such a young player.
Yeah.
You know, let's not forget how early he moved to Real Madrid from Rennes as well. So it's not...
Because we remember when he played those first few games for Rennes. When
exactly.
I actually did him in, I think, his second game. And I didn't know too much about him. And someone said, oh, he's 16. What?
Yeah.
16. He played with such maturity and so much
There
composure.
Was that game against PSG in Rennes.
Yeah.
Where in the start of the season, it was August or something. And he was only 17. That must have been his second season or first full season. And he just ran that game and bossed that game, and Verratti could not get close to him.
No.
They could not get the ball off him. It was really impressive. And I think, again, if you put him in the right environment and the right position, because I think he can play as a six, but you're right, it's not, you don't get the best out of him.
You lose something. If you play him that number six role, you lose something.
I think he's a perfect, like, kind of box to box with the freedom to go forward and back and do all that kind of energy that he has. Because that's where I think he's so, so good.
Yeah.
Is the title race done? 5 points now?
Unfortunately, it's early in the season to say it, but Real Madrid look as though they're going to run away with the title. I can't see Girona coming back from this. Real Madrid just have too much about them. Barcelona aren't going to catch them up. Barcelona's still got their problems.
Yeah.
Real Madrid seem to be gaining in confidence, even though, as you've just already mentioned, no centre halves.
Yeah.
Alaba missing, Rudiger missing, Nacho missing. You know, they're all missing. Yet, they still didn't look flustered or didn't look under any sort of pressure. My question, I think you were going to say, that can they continue with these two as centre-backs?
Yeah.
I remember a game many years ago, Juventus were 3-0 down from the first leg in Juventus, and they went to Real Madrid, and I was doing the commentary. I said, the only way I can see Juventus getting back into this, if they keep getting crosses to the far post, and Mandzukic, who was then playing on the left-hand side, gets up against Carvajal and keeps beating him in the air. Well, he scored two early goals, and I think they got back to 3-3, and Real Madrid won. But surely teams have to look at that. When Carvajal's playing as one of the centre-halves, we've got to stick balls on top of him and get our best header of the ball going up against him, because he can't avoid that. You can't hide that. You know, he's not good in the air.
Yeah.
He's not a big player. No, he's not used to being good in the air. So that's something that other teams might focus on and cause Real Madrid a problem.
But then we thought, as we said earlier, that Girona might do that with Dominic.
They didn't do it.
They didn't do it. There was not even space for their crosses.
And that was, you know, Michel is meant to be a great coach.
Yeah.
And he's done a fantastic job. But that had to be the game plan. Yeah, get it wide, Jan Couto to get crosses into the box. But they turned away from it. And Dovbik even didn't make runs into the box. He was coming short to get on the ball. And you're thinking, what have they seen?
It was difficult.
We haven't,
for them.
You know.
I mean, for Jan Couto, by the way, who's been one of the revelations of the season, who's been good, but Vini just destroyed him.
Which he can.
Yeah.
You know, and
which he's done to a lot of right backs. It's not just Jan Couto.
Every mistake he made ended up being a goal or a chance. You had to feel a bit sorry for him. And I'm not sure it was great that all the other players, every time he made a mistake, went over and patted him on the back as if to say, it's his mistake again. You know? it was a difficult game.
I mean, there's still a Clásico to come, albeit at the Bernabeu, but you know, potentially you can drop points. There will be games where probably Real Madrid are going to be tested more than in this game where, as we say, Girona were probably just not good enough, and the whole occasion was a bit too much for them. But five points.
Can you see any side going on a run where they don't lose another game?
Girona will need to win every single game between now and the end of the season, and hope for Real Madrid to lose some.
And Barcelona likewise. And Barcelona can't go and beat Granada.
Exactly.
What
do we expect now from a Girona point of view? Just secure top four, which already And you've been to their stadium. It's not a Champions League stadium. No. This is not a Champions League club, full stop.
No.
But for them to finish top four would be almost like a title winning.
It would be fantastic. And I think that's their it's been their main aim from the start of the season. Once they got into that top area, that's what they've been talking about. They've never talked about winning the title. They've talked about being a top four club. And they've done very well. They need their best players playing. That's proof.
For sure. Yeah,
they need Herrera in midfield. He's dynamic. You know, he would have given Camavinga a good run for his money.
For sure.
Daley Blint's not quick, but he would have been able to play out from the back better than the players that they had in the team at the weekend. And they need Savio to be more consistent. You know, he's a young player that everybody's talking about. He didn't play very well against Lucas Vazquez. He played much better when he went to the other side of the field late on in the game when the game was already dead. But they're going to have to play at their very best. Where will they finish? I think probably third. I think they're going to that would knock their confidence severely. I think.
Just to finish, I like what Michel said after the game. He said, "Listen, Real Madrid, this is not a Liga. Liga is Bilbao, Real Sociedad, Valencia, Villarreal, this kind of club." He said, "Barca, Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid. They're not. Yeah. This is not our league.
No,
league is which I mean." It would have been strange for him to say something else after being spanked 4-0 against Real Madrid. But I just like the fact that they also know where they're coming from, where they belong. And if they finish top four, then amazing.
And there was a great Martin Einstein's Bicycle Diaries with the sporting director talking about how they have to get their players. And they have to get players that have been good players but are out of form, have been left out of the other clubs. They've had injuries and they're coming back from injuries. Or they're young players that have failed somewhere else but they can see potential. Yeah. That's how they get their players.
Yeah.
And they try and get the best out of them. Yeah. And Michel has done that.
Yeah, he's done that. And there's also a bit of help from the City Football Group. But that's one for another day.
We won't go down
there. No, let's not go there.
Yeah.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Right, enough Real Madrid, Girona. What about some quickies, Stu?
Let's go, Jules.
Arsenal humiliate West Ham at the London Stadium on Sunday and Declan Rice put a world-class performance. This was very impressive, Stu.
Oh, Arsenal were fantastic, weren't they? You know, West Ham didn't play very well, but Arsenal's passing, their decision-making, the threat. You know, West Ham had a 10-minute spell where they tried to press and Arsenal played around there.
Yeah,
and as you said, Declan Rice is a top-class performer.
It can't be easy to go back to your former club, you know, and to your former stadium when you know everybody, you've been there for so long.
It helps when you're playing for a very good team against a team that aren't particularly good at the moment. You know,
I guess.
And are playing so defensively, I would say, West Ham. Well, playing poorly defensively, but they're trying to play a defensive game. But Declan Rice... Again, I think he can do everything a midfield player should be able to do. He can defend, he can pass it, he can score more goals, he can run. Oh, he's a top-class
player. The way he adapted from coming to a West Ham team that played such a different brand of football and style of football to Arsenal under Arteta and adapt so quickly. If you'd come from a ball playing team, to go from that to another ball playing team, albeit better, it would have been fine. This is kind of the same principles.
Yeah.
To go from, like you said, a very defensive Moyes team, and we'll talk about Moyes later on the show, to this team and to adapt so well and to feel like you've always been in the kind of environment, I'm just like, wow.
And I think Arteta's used him well at times. He's had Jorginho next to him, as he did against Liverpool, and they combined well. Yesterday he was the main holding player, but he would come forward and Odegaard was one side of him, and another midfield player on the other side.
It was great.
Now, it was first versus second in Germany, Jules. Bayer Leverkusen versus Bayern Munich. What happened?
It was an incredible game, and what a performance for Bayer Leverkusen and Xabi Alonso. As we talked about Ancelotti and the tactics in the Girona game, well, Alonso got everything right as well. The team that he picks, to start with Amin Adli, to have Tella as the kind of right winger and Stanisic at the right wing back, everything worked so well, and they just destroyed, really destroyed Bayern Munich. It was such an impressive performance, I thought, with the ball, but also without the ball, where they just closed all the spaces. They controlled every space when they didn't have the ball. There was nothing that Bayern could do. Harry Kane hardly got involved. Sané neither. Musiala neither. It was just like so, so good. And you know how Bayer Leverkusen have been good this season.
Yeah.
But then when they play against a team like Bayern and they're still so good, you're thinking like, wow, okay, this is another level.
So the coach has obviously done a magnificent job.
18 months.
And that's why everybody's after him at the moment.
I don't know. I guess there'd be a time maybe where things are not going to be so good. But right now, 31 games unbeaten this season. No, nobody has been able to beat them, not even close. And they've got a 5 points gap, a bit like Real Madrid. And I just can't see them. Of course, you can always drop points. But I just can't see them, unless something dramatic happens, just dropping just even the standards, you know, to be able to let Bayern Munich come back into the title race. Erling Haaland is back to his best and lead Manchester City to victory against Everton on Saturday. We have no hopes then now, Stu.
When you say we, are you talking about Arsenal?
I mean, we, anybody, people in general.
In general, nobody else has got a chance. Yeah. I wouldn't say Man City played particularly brilliantly against Everton, and they left it until, I think, the 71st minute when they got the first goal. But I like the second goal from Haaland. The first one is a good finish, but you know, it's what you expect him to do. The second one, that's what I want.
The run,
the power, the pace, then 1v1 against the goalkeeper, just slotting it down the side of him.
Yeah.
That's when I think of Erling Haaland at his best. That's what I see. That's what I remember at Dortmund. That's what I remember when he first came to Manchester City. Not just the close tap-ins, those sort of goals where he'd make those sort of runs. Kevin De Bruyne playing balls down the side.
If you give them that space, the two of them, it's just
fantastic. Now, the Ivory Coast are the champions of Africa, Jules. Hey. Who'd have thought that 10 days ago?
I mean, no one, Stu. I won't lie. Remember, they were destroyed by Equatorial Guinea 4-0 in the last game of the group stages.
Yep.
They were on the verge of being out. They just got super lucky because Morocco could not qualify, and that meant they stayed in the tournament as one of the best third teams in the group stages, although they only won one game and lost two of the three in the group stages. And then they had a miracle in the last 16, a miracle against Senegal, a miracle in the quarterfinals against Mali to come back in those two games to go and win. And then in the semi-final, it was a transformed team. They were solid, they were good, they moved the ball well, they were strong, they were powerful. Sebastien Haller played great. And then in the final, they were the better team again. And I'm a bit disappointed by Nigeria, who were very minimalist from kind of start to finish. And it gets you to a certain point. Yeah, you're very strong defensively. You don't give much away to the opposition, and then you've got Osimhen or Lookman who can do something. But it gets to a point, if the other team is better than you, then you struggle. And I just felt that Nigeria almost lost this final as much as Ivory Coast won it. And it's great for Ivory Coast. They won it for the third time in their history when they were really, really almost out. It's an incredible story. It was an incredible tournament with so many twists and
would that be the first team that would have won anything, having lost two out of their first three games? I would imagine
I think the first team to finish third in a group stage and go and win a tournament.
In any tournament.
Yeah, so Portugal did it in 2016, I think, in the Euros.
Okay.
But in AFCON, for sure. And then also they were the first home team. You know, we usually say, oh, if the competition is on home soil, this is a huge advantage. Not in AFCON, because they were the first team since 2000 and something to actually have won it on home soil. So well done to them, to MSV, who, you know, now he's the manager, the head coach, but was just the team manager at the start of the tournament. So many things happened in those 4 weeks for them. And now they're...
Great tournament.
Yeah, African champions. Well done to them. Really well done to Ivory Coast. Lamine Yamal is 16, Stu, only 16. Is it right that we expect him to save Barcelona every time, a bit like he did against Granada on Sunday night?
Well, you can forget his age, because when you see him play, at times he's Barcelona's best player.
Yeah.
I mean, the first goal he scored was, you know, in the right place at the right time. But the second one, he'd actually given the ball away. The crowd sort of had a bit of a moan, and he won it back and then goes...
The way
and
he won it back as well, you know.
And
that.
Smashes it in at the near post. I've seen him play regularly over the course of the season. And when he's playing on the right-hand side, he's done a better job than Rafinha.
Yeah, I agree.
He's probably doing a better job than Dembele did when he was at the club.
Different style.
But he's got more trickery probably than Dembele. Yeah. Dembele had more pace. But he's just making the right decisions. He looks an outstanding player. He looks like he's got a bit of strength. What they have to be careful with, they've done it with other players. Overplayed Pedri. Overplayed Gavi. Yeah. Overplayed Ansu Fati. Don't overplay him. Pick him. Pull him out the team at the right time so he doesn't get stale.
Because right now he's one of the rare positives of the season, right?
Absolutely. We also had a big clash in Italy, Jules. Roma versus Inter.
Yeah, that was really good on Saturday. So Saturday, if you wanted to watch all the big games, they were all at the same times. Roma-Inter kicked off at 5 o'clock in the UK.
Yeah.
At 5.30 you had Bayer Leverkusen, Bayern Munich and Real Madrid-Girona. That's one for another day. This was great. Inter won 4-2 under the pouring rain. Roma actually took the lead and went 2-1 up just after the break on a great counter-attacking goal from Stefan El-Sharawi. And then I think Inter's class overall was just too good. We saw a great Marcus Thuram performance again. And in all the big games, Thuram has delivered. Lautaro was good. The midfield was strong. Calhanoglu, Barella, Mkhitaryan. They just know each other so well. It's just a delight to watch. And I think Roma will get there. And under De Rossi, you see already the improvement. It's just that I think this game was just a step too high.
Are they behaving themselves a bit more now?
Yeah.
Roma under De Rossi than they were under Mourinho.
And they play.
Yeah.
And that's the big difference. Yes. Under Mourinho, it was just they were not a playing football team. Now, even if you're a player, you could see that they have fun. Okay, they lost that game, but Inter are by far the best team in Serie A this season. Yeah. So it's okay, but I think they showed enough positives in the game to be really happy.
Because you need Roma doing well.
Yeah, exactly. Stu, Liverpool are still top of the table in the Premier League. They went back there with their win against Burnley, but it was not great. And Trent's knee seems to be an issue.
Yeah, it wasn't great, but they did enough. There was a couple of chances. I think the worst thing was their defensive problems. There was a couple of times Fofana's running through. And,
those two chances.
You know, that would have pulled them back into the game.
Yeah.
And he should really take them.
Yeah.
And that was a flaw in Liverpool's play. They didn't play with great dynamism, I didn't think. I think the Arsenal game took a little bit out of them.
In terms of physicality,
in terms of mental. You know, they've for weeks they've been rushing teams, they've been closing down. I've seen them play really, really well. And that Arsenal game, I think, took them by surprise or shocked them.
Yeah.
You know, we were second best by a long way. And they didn't quite get it together against Burnley. Alexander Arnold's knee, that's a problem. It was not a problem for them defensively because they're better with other people in a defensive position, but they're going to miss his passing, of course. And hopefully he gets himself back in shape. Now, Jules, what did you make of PSG against Lille on Saturday?
Come on! So it was interesting because Lille have been great with Paulo Fonseca this season, one of the best teams, certainly playing team in the league. And Luis Enrique decided, you know what, we've got the Champions League coming up on Wednesday night, Real Sociedad in Paris, let's make loads of changes. So it was very much a B team for PSG, no Zaire Emery, no Mbappe, no Barcola, no Marquinhos, no Vitinha. And PSG played really well as a team.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that when Kylian is there and Kylian is not there. This is a debate that we've had so many times. This is not the problem here. But they pressed really well as a team, collectively. Yep. Dembele triggering the press, Colomwani, Gonzalo Ramos. They recovered the ball really high. Ugarte was good. And even if they conceded the first goal, which they're still a bit vulnerable at times in transitions, I thought they did a lot of really good things out of possession as well as in possession. And I think that was really good. It'd be very different when the stars are back and Kylian is back because they just play differently. But I thought from a B team performance in a big game, that was really good. It's another win for United and another goal for Rasmus Højlund. Are they a proper team now?
Are they a proper team now? Aston Villa still made chances, you know, in the second half. Yes, they're certainly playing better. There's a more determination, I would say, about Manchester United at the moment. Remember, they've gone back to a centre-half pairing that he didn't think were very good a little while ago, in Varane and Maguire. Casemiro was out the side for a long time. He's now playing, was back in the side.
Yeah, he's
doing his job that he does next to Menu. But go back to Højlund. I saw him play really well against Galatasaray, where he scored a couple of goals, and I thought, this player looks like he could be the top centre-forward. Yeah. He could run, he could hold it up, he had an eye for goal, he looked quick, powerful. Then he went off the ball. He's a confidence player.
Yeah.
And at the moment, his confidence is up. It was an easy goal for him, but he's in the right place. I think Manchester United are going to challenge for the top four, but it's going to be a struggle for them.
Yeah, I agree.
Milan-Napoli on Sunday was not the classic we'd hoped to see.
It was really bad, Stu. It was, I mean, I didn't know what to expect. Again, Napoli have been terrible since, especially since Mazzarri took over. I think they lost 8 games in the league this season. That was his 5th defeat. So 5 of those 8 came under him since he took over in November. He promised that he would never play a back three because he's a back three manager.
Yeah, he's always been.
Yeah, and obviously, guess what? When things were starting to go wrong, he went back to a back three. And they played a back three in the first half where I thought they were dreadful. No shot on target, only one shot in that first half. And Milan didn't need to be particularly good. They scored a lovely goal, Giroud, Rafael Leao, and Theo with the finish. The second half was slightly better from Napoli in a 4-3-3. One of the centre-backs came off at half-time and Politano came on. But in the end, it was still not enough. They hit the post late on a cross that was deflected, but there was still not, I think, enough urgency. And
this surely must be one of the worst title defences that there's 100%. Ever been. I think Chelsea once finished 10th after winning the title.
Remember that, yeah.
But this is really
and
poor.
Also, I mean, it might be hard to go back-to-back and win titles, right? But when you were playing so well, one of the best football team that we've seen in the last 10 years or so, last season under Spalletti, to this rubbish, because it is really rubbish. Yeah, yeah. You feel even for someone like Kvaratskhelia, for example, who was so good last year, enjoying his football, and now he played him as a...
Do you think it all started going wrong when they lost in the Champions League to...
To Milan last season.
Yeah, that's when, after that, their performances in the league weren't
true,
quite so great.
But they had like a 15-point cushion.
Yeah.
I think Spalletti leaving was the big one, and maybe not replacing them with the right manager. I mean, I don't think Rudy Garcia was the right pick. No. I don't think Mazzarri is the right pick again. I don't know what they're going to do next season. It would be someone new, of course.
Mazzarri hasn't had success for quite some while, has he?
He
did well with that team, with the three tenors.
Ten years ago.
A long time ago.
It's
but
mad.
When you look at his career after that, it's not been great.
It's a shame how you almost tarnish your legacy in a way.
Yeah.
Or you know, A-team legacy by getting everything wrong pretty much since they won the title after 33 years. It's ridiculous. Let's go back to that United, that Aston Villa United game, Stu, because United are going great, as you mentioned, rightly. It's not the case really for Aston Villa. What do you make of their current form?
Poor. I don't think they played quite so badly against Manchester United as they did against Chelsea in the FA Cup.
Yeah, true.
And Chelsea, I was doing that game, and before the match, we're talking about the demise of Chelsea, how Aston Villa were certainties to win the game. They were going to dominate in all areas. They were playing good football, though the results weren't quite as good as they had been. They were shocking. They allowed Chelsea to outplay them. They had nothing going forward. They looked leggy. And there's something not quite right at the moment. I like the manager, Unai Emery. He's done a good job at Villarreal. He's done a good job everywhere he's been. Maybe not quite so well at Arsenal. But at the moment, they look very cumbersome as a back four. Yeah. They're opened up far too easily. They play at times too high a line when there's no pressure on the ball. And they're not quite playing as well going forward. So worrying times, I would say, for Unai
Emery. Yeah, it's one win in six in all competition. You mentioned the FA Cup against Chelsea. And again, there are chances against United. Yeah. They could have go 2-1 up then before considering that second goal. But I guess
what they have to do is keep the crowd on side. If the crowd stay on side, because I think everybody at Villa were right behind Unai Emery and the players. They've just got to get a win fairly soon, just to get them back on track. Because I think they are a good side.
And it's just that behind them, top three is sorted, right?
Yeah.
But behind them, Spurs won, Newcastle won, United obviously won because they beat them. It's pushing behind as well.
Qatar made history, Jules, by winning back-to-back Asian Cups.
Yeah, incredible. As to in Qatar, this time they won their final against Jordan 3-1 with 3 penalties from Afif, which is rare enough to score 3 penalties. And to be fair, I didn't think there was anything controversial, let's put it that way, in the referee giving those 3 penalties. He took them really well as well. He's their star player, to be fair. He was the best player in the tournament, I felt, with Altamari from Jordan. And again, they go back to back. I don't know really what happened at the World Cup and why. Maybe just the level was too high with the team that they faced in the World Cup. But certainly on their continent, they've been good in this tournament and they won it. It's rare enough. They had the best goalkeeper in the tournament.
Who's the coach?
That's a good question.
Sorry, I shouldn't have asked that one.
No, I just need to remember his name. To be fair, they changed after the World Cup, and it was probably the right thing to do because of, I think, psychologically what happened at the World Cup was an issue on home soil. To be humiliated in a way, the way they did, was not ideal. And I think Titin Marquez, another Spanish, took over and has done, you know, I think has done well. He's had a few experience in club like Espanyol and in Belgium as well. But they've played good football in this tournament.
Yeah.
And when their star players like Afif, like Basham in goal, step up, they become really difficult to beat. So
I always knew they were going to be a good footballing nation when I played in the Junior World Cup in 1981.
Yeah,
and they,
I remember
Qatar
this story.
Beat England 2-1 in the semi-final to play West Germany, as they were.
There were a lot of discussions around this tournament, which I can understand, about their starting 11. Mm. They have two Spanish players who've been naturalized Qataris. There's a few others as well who were born outside of Qatar who either moved young, moved late in the careers, which, you know, I can understand.
They had an academy, didn't they, in Qatar?
Yeah,
Aspire from around the world.
But whether you're happy with the players that they have on the pitch or not, they still have to perform, right?
And they performed.
And it's not like if they had Cristiano, Messi and Mbappe in their team. Mm. So well done to them. I would rather stay on the positive side of it all. Stu, you commentated on Sevilla Atletico on Sunday for ESPN, and it was not a great watch, really, from an Atleti point of view.
Not from an Atleti point of view. Great for Sevilla. The crowd got right behind them. They've got a young player playing up front for them called Isaac Moreno.
Yeah, lovely finish.
It was a good finish with the header at the far post, but his all-round performance was sensational.
He looks really strong from there.
He looked strong. He did everything right. He missed a couple of chances.
Yeah.
But he was excellent and tried to link up with En-Nesyri, which En-Nesyri didn't always play at his best. But it was a very good performance. They defended well all around the field. There was a great goal line clearance from Jesus Navas, from Griezmann.
Yeah.
But Atleti once again looked ponderous at times on the ball. They didn't start playing really until the second half. You know, there's
very
something wrong with their
sometimes.
Mentality at times, that they just can't start the game quickly, and that was the case in this one.
Yeah, and Morata picked up an injury that doesn't look good.
Doesn't look good. No. He'd been down a couple of times before that, and then he had a whack, and it wasn't a bad challenge. He just went into the player, who was a very solid player, Sumari, and he obviously hurt his knee. But Atleti didn't play well, and it's great to see Sevilla with the crowd behind them climbing away from the relegation
zone. Yeah, back-to-back wins, I think, for them now.
Yeah. Dortmund with a massive win, Jules.
Massive on Friday night because they obviously...
Tennis balls and chocolate as well.
Yeah.
Thrown onto the pitch.
Yeah, that protest. Yeah, you're right. We should mention that because we didn't mention it for the in the Bayer Leverkusen, Bayern Munich quick hits. We go back to... It's an old story in a way. That the fans are still protesting again. The German league selling some of their TV rights to... like private hedge fund company, like La Liga did with CVC, like France did with CVC as well. The fans are not happy. You know how important the fans are, the 50+1 rule in Germany, all of that. Not happy, so they throw tennis balls and chocolate, well, anything they can find, really, on the pitch. A few of the games were stopped for quite a lengthy time as well, including this one. Dortmund with a big win against Freiburg. Freiburg, not very good. They've been playing in Europe against Lens on Thursday night in the Europa League. Not good, but for Dortmund, a really good win. And now that opened a gap for them in fourth place with Leipzig in fifth of 3 points. Daniel Malen with 2 goals. Really good from Ian Madsen. Mm. We talked about Chelsea earlier. Really, really good from him too, with a great assist on the third goal by Füllkrug. For all the time, Dortmund have been really up and down in the same game, not just over the season, in the same game where you really don't know how unpredictable they are. For this game, I thought they were quite controlled, so I think Terzic was happy. It was a good way of starting the weekend for them, so well done. Back to West Ham, Stu, because we talked slightly about David Moyes and the defensive side of their game. He's under pressure now, clearly, after such humiliation. Do you understand?
I know a lot of West Ham supporters, and they're divided. And I'll tell you my view after I said this. I've got one friend who's a very good supporter who says, we're, you know, high up the table. When Moyes came, we were down at the bottom. Both times he came, he saved us from relegation.
Yeah, that's true.
Much higher up the table. I've got his brother, who's also a West Ham fan, says, I don't like going anymore. It's boring football. It's not entertaining. We play on the counter-attack. David Moyes is too negative. I don't enjoy watching football at the Olympic Stadium anymore, the London Stadium anymore. And I understand that a little bit, because as a supporter, you want to go and think your team at home will entertain you a little bit. You know, I'm not sort of saying by playing fancy football, but by getting the ball into the front areas and getting crosses into the box and threatening the opposition and closing it down. Because when they do that, the crowd get right behind them. When they sit off and defend, it's boring to watch at times, particularly for the home side. And the thing that annoyed West Ham supporters more than anything else, they were in the quarterfinal of the League Cup, the Carabao Cup. They thought that Liverpool were going to play a second string side. West Ham were on a good run.
Yeah.
They went up there and David Moyes, by his team selection, almost gave the game to Liverpool. And it was a terrible 100%. Performance. They then think, and West Ham is a club that aren't going to win the league.
Yeah.
They're going to struggle to get into the top four. They like cup competitions. They're in the FA Cup against Bristol City at home in the third round. They expect to, the fans expect them to beat them.
100%.
They then go to Bristol City with a second string side with lots, maybe one or two injuries.
Yeah.
And they play pathetically and they lose the game. And that turns West Ham supporters off. And that's why David Moyes is under pressure.
You know, like, okay, they lost to United and Arsenal the last two games. So, okay. And you can set up your team differently for this game. But the game before that, against Bournemouth at home, when you only pick two attacking players in your team, in Kudus and Bowen, and I know you've got Paqueta is injured and that's a big loss. You still had Danny Ings on the bench that you could start and play for an hour and play Bowen on the right, Ings up front, Kudus on the left. Cornet is not Messi, but Cornet is a good player that can do a job. You play nine defensive players.
It's almost as if David Moyes doesn't trust players that are creative. You know, every time he puts on the field, you can almost, like Cornet played against Bristol City in the away game. It's almost every time he touched the ball or made a mistake, you could see David Moyes, there's a player giving the ball away again. I'm not doing what I wanted him to do. You've got to trust your creative players. Benrahma, you know, he hasn't been good for West Ham, but do you think he's been encouraged? You know, do you think he's a player? Creative players need confidence.
Yeah.
And if the manager doesn't give you that confidence, 100%. You're going to struggle.
And then you let Fornals, who scored, by the way, for Betis this weekend, and Benrahma, who started for Lyon, and you don't replace them.
No.
So you lose two creative players. Yeah. Whether you played them a lot or not, whether you like them or not, it doesn't matter. You let two creative players go, and you didn't replace them.
And the problem in the game against Arsenal is, once that first goal went in,
it's over.
It's over. Because, people argue and say, well, last year they came back from 2-0 down to draw against Arsenal.
Yeah.
But you could just sense the player, you could see the players think, that's 100%. It. You know, our game plan's out the window now.
Yeah.
Nice host Monaco on Sunday, and it was hosted Monaco on Sunday, and it was great, Jules.
It was a fantastic derby, Stu, really. And from a Nice team that we've seen, and the young Italian manager, I think will admit to himself, very solid, very defensive, don't give much away. It's all about controlling spaces when you have the ball, when you don't have the ball, all of that. I mean, they were amazing in this game. They lost 3-2 because Monaco were just super clinical, super efficient, played a great game in the 4-3-3. Adi Hutter under a lot of pressure at Monaco after they lost to a third division team in the cup in midweek. He was under pressure. His team responded so well. They won 3-2. It was end-to-end at times. With goal, they went 1-0 up, 1-1, 2-1, 2-2, 3-2. It could have been 3-3 in the end. It was just super spectacular, super great.
Liga at its best.
Exactly. I was going to say, great, really great advert for Liga and French football, which we need. Everybody needs always. But, you know, for us, it's maybe rarer than for others. So I'll take that. And it was great. And I'm happy for Monaco in a way, because PSG are 11 points clear of Nice in second place. So that is gone. But the race for second, Nice, third, Brest, Monaco in fourth, and even below that, is going to be great. So, you know, bring on that, not so much the title race, but the second to fourth race. Let's call it that. Bruno Guimarães was the shining light for Newcastle win away at Forest on Saturday. Stu, do you think he's underrated?
Not by Newcastle fans.
No, but it feels like we don't really talk much about how good he is, I feel.
He's a very good player. And again, he can do both sides of the game. He's a good passer of the ball. He can control the midfield when he's playing well. He plays little 1-2s around pressure. He'll defend and get around the field. if there's one thing that he still lacks is discipline at times. You know, I've seen him in games where you think, come on, you're losing your head now. And
yeah,
you're losing,
like the Arsenal game, remember?
And you're losing your quality because now you're getting involved. There was I think, a Carabao Cup semi-final last year where he came on as a sub and got involved in someone and got sent off. And it caused Newcastle a problem for 10, 15 minutes. But if he can control that side of his game and control his emotions, he's a very good footballer. There's no question about that. He can do everything you want from a midfield player.
I love watching
him play. He's a good passer of the ball and obviously scored a couple of goals as well, so that added to his game.
But like for you, I mean, as a former player, so if for the ones who haven't seen the third goal, so Newcastle is 2-2, Newcastle win 3-2. Forest recovered the ball in their own 30 yards and Anthony Elanga is trying this pass from kind of a right-hand side towards the centre, so on the edge of his own box, that pass towards, I think it's Gibbs White, on the edge of the Forest box, and Guimaraes reads it, but anybody could have read, watching on television, you could read the ball and the pass, and then Guimaraes reads it well, gets the ball, and then curls it. There's no way Anthony Elanga should try that pass at 2-2 at that moment in the game, surely.
But
it drives me mad.
But you're seeing more and more of that in football, that the passes that are so risky, are being encouraged by coaches now. You know, it's almost, how many, we're going to talk about Tottenham Brighton later on, how many times do teams give the ball away in bad areas? You know, and it causes goals. The way balls are turned over in bad areas at the moment is getting higher and higher.
It is.
It adds to the excitement of the game, you have to say.
That's very true.
Now, Ciro Immobile made history for Lazio this weekend, 3 days before hosting Bayern in the Champions League. What's all that about, George?
Yeah, it's a great day, I think, for Ciro Immobile, for his career, for the whole family. He scored his 200th Serie A goal. So not in all competition, in the league. Incredible. Only the eighth player in history to do it, joining the likes of Baggio and Totti and others. Incredible achievement, really, from Ciro Immobile. Still very divisive figure because it's never really worked out for him with Italy. But certainly for Lazio in the league, it's been incredible. And the Lazio team that won, 3-1, they were not great. Their goalkeeper made some really big saves. But Bayern were not good either, as we mentioned earlier.
And Tuchel, I think, is under pressure for his job. But he's under pressure that they've got to put in a good performance.
Yeah, so I think this Lazio Bayern game, which on paper looks quite one-sided for Bayern, even if the first leg this week will be in Rome, I just don't know. I think on a good day, this Lazio team can cause problems to teams. Provedel is a really good goalkeeper. Ciro Immobile is a very good finisher. If something happens, if they take the lead, if Luis Alberto does something a bit special, if there's something a bit special in this game, then Bayern, I think, with the data they have in them right now,
when I looked at Bayern's team against Bayer Leverkusen, it hasn't got that look of superiority that it once had.
Yeah, no, maybe. I see what you mean.
He benched him,
he dropped him. Müller was on the bench as well. There was that back three that was a bit strange of a call.
De Ligt was on the bench as well.
He's coming back from an injury. Yeah. But I mean, Eric Dier playing in the football team is not for me in 2024, to be fair.
Yeah, there's always going to be problems physically.
Exactly. Talking about Champions League, Stu, we said it's back. Do we give Copenhagen much hope against Manchester City, even in Copenhagen on Tuesday night?
I give them hope that they might restrict Manchester City to not many chances and by sitting deep and trying to play on the counter-attack. Are they going to threaten Man City over the two legs? Probably not that much. Man City are still a fantastic side and they find ways to break down the opposition. But I have seen that they've been frail on occasions, Man City, this season. But they're coming into that run of form this time of the year. Haaland fit, Kevin De Bruyne fit.
Yeah.
I can't see Copenhagen.
I think it's 10 wins in a row for City.
I can't see Copenhagen causing them too many problems.
You know the atmosphere is going to be great at Parken. We saw that against United in the group stage.
Copenhagen did well to get to where they are because, it was a tough group. Bayern Munich, Manchester United, Galatasaray.
Yes,
come second in that group, they've done well.
Yeah, and they took the lead against Bayern at home.
Yeah.
They drew nil-nil away in Bayern. So I don't think City can...
It's not going to be a 5-0 or something. It's going to be tight, but I think Man City will win the game.
I agree.
And what kind of game do you expect between PSG and Real Sociedad on Wednesday?
Well...
Unbiased view.
Of course. It's always objective when it comes down to PSG. No, but I mentioned earlier, the win against Lille, that was really good with the B team. But a team that played as a team, the stars are going to be back for this game, of course. Kylian Mbappé, the main one. And this Real Sociedad team that you've seen a few times, I'm sure, plays really lovely football with intensity. They've got loads of players out injured. It's a problem. They're hoping for Yarzabal to be back. Even if he's back for this game, he hasn't trained or played for a little bit. I don't know how much fit he would really be. I think PSG should be cautious because this is a Real Sociedad team that we saw very good in the Champions League group stages against Inter. Again, in a group that was not easy, Benfica and Salzburg. But really, PSG should go through. You know, we have all our top players. Everybody's there. We don't really have anybody missing. The form has been really good with the ball. Defensively, it's been a bit of a worry because they've been vulnerable at times. And I think Real Sociedad can maybe exploit that. But in Paris, in the first leg, the second leg might be different in Spain. But on Wednesday night in Paris, I really expect PSG to kind of control that game and win it. But again, with them, you just never know. You just never know. Tottenham Brighton was a superb spectacle, Stu, on Saturday afternoon. And Spurs, who win, by the way, as many points late, then they drop, then they lose. Got a big win. That's a big, big win late.
Big win against a very good Brighton side. You know, Brighton can cause you major problems and but can also get beaten very easily. And, you know, I watched some of the game, but watched all the highlights later on. And it was amazing. We talked earlier about giving the ball away in bad areas. It was a great game because both sides wanted to try and play out from the back and at times in a risky manner. And both sets of players wanted to close the ball down and press high up the field. So the ball changed hands in bad areas so often, and it created lots of opportunities. Yeah. Both sides have got creative players. Both sides know exactly how they want to play. Is their style of football going to win them things, win them plaudits? It's going to win them the fans over. I'm not sure that it's going to win them titles or get them into where they want to be. And that's my little issue with Spurs. They're a little bit too open. They're a little bit too...
Yeah, you can see that.
They will play and create chances. You know, it's great having Song back in the side, you know, and Johnson
and
came
decisive
on
the winning goal,
And Johnson scores the winner, having come on as well. But I still think they can be vulnerable to any sort of good attacking
play. You know what I struggle to understand? So a 1-1 draw for Brighton away, I suppose, is a good result, right? So why in the 96th minute, everybody's forward to try to score the winning goal, where surely you would be happy with the draw. And instead, they're so open. It's so easy for Son to go on that left and cross the ball for Johnson. I think Estupinan first is hoping that he's onside, that he's offside. But once you stop, even for a brief second, it's too late. And then you are half a second late and Johnson has a tap-in.
And then, but the other way you could look at it, Brighton had two or three chances very near the end where they could have gone and won the game. And that's their philosophy. We're going to go and win this game.
I guess so.
Mitoma gets down the outside.
Maybe.
That's the way they play. Brighton don't expect to be in the top four. They don't expect maybe to be in the top six. What they expect is them to play good football, win games against big sides, lose games against other sides, mid-table and entertain their crowd.
If I was a manager, though, and I know De Zerbi would want them to try and win the game, but if you can't win it, just don't lose it. And certainly not like that. So cheaply like that.
Yeah. RB's Leipzig draw at the weekend, which is never a good look before facing Real Madrid, is it?
No, and we mentioned how good Real Madrid were, obviously against Girona. For Leipzig, not so good. 2-2 away at Augsburg. Probably the worst thing in this game, Stu, is that they also missed a penalty at 2-2. Mm. And Luis Openda, who's been so good for them, scored a lovely header in this game on the penalty spot. And I never thought he would... Okay, you can miss a pen. But this is one of the worst penalties I've seen this season. It's literally a pass to the goalkeeper. It's not in a corner. It's not with power. It's just inside of his right foot. Literally, I promise you, it's a pass. And I think even the keeper is surprised because
Did he think the goalkeeper was going to go the other way? Did he try and
I think it's one of those where he slows down his running.
Yeah.
And maybe expect the keeper to show one side. So then he's caught. Oh, what should I do? And then he does nothing. And literally, I promise you, the keeper dives on his left. And the ball is so soft. Even the keeper is a bit surprised. He said, really? Is that it you have? And then saves it. It's Openda will score many more goals, many more penalties. It's not a problem. But this cost them the win, which we said Dortmund are now 3 points clear and Leipzig are fifth. 4 days or 3 days before this big Real Madrid clash on Wednesday night, it's not ideal. I think Leipzig still have enough on the counter to cause Carvajal and Tchouaméni a few issues there and there, and I think this would be a very nice open game to watch, but that was not the best rehearsal, let's put it that way, before the Real Madrid game. Stu, last week FIFA announced the intention to try blue cards in football, which is basically for a sin. It's like a sin bin. If you for dissent or for a cynical foul, you go into the 10 minutes out and then you come back after. The reaction from, I think, the football world, the media, head coaches, players was so bad that they actually backtracked. First of all, as a former player yourself and as a former coach, and now as a as a pundit, what do you make of the idea? Is a sin bin idea a bad idea, like what we can see in rugby, for example?
Well, hockey, I know I'm very close to a hockey umpire, and they have the sin bin, and they say it works very well there, because when you, if a player gets overheated and starts screaming and shouting, rather than send him off, you say, you go off for some 2 minutes, 5 minutes, whatever it is, and you calm yourself down, and you come back on. And there's a lot of decisions that are made where it's either nothing or it's a sending off when you see the VAR. And sometimes you think, oh, I'm not quite sure whether he's intended that, whether he's slipped. And that's when I think a blue card, if that's what colour you want to do, it could work. Cynical fouls. They're the ones that I don't like, when, you know, a player's running away and somebody just grabs his shirt and pulls him back, so, and it's only a yellow card.
That's so
cynical compared with, you know, somebody might get sent off for being slightly late in a challenge. So I think it could work as long as the referees don't use it too often. I'm surprised that so many people were against it.
So, for example, I saw Ange Postecoglou, who I thought was a really good answer. He said, the problem is when someone is going to go down to 10 for 10 minutes, they're going to park the bus, the double-decker bus, the treble-decker bus. And this game, who might have been great, open, attacking, you know, whatever, with intensity, is going to suddenly become like attack v defense.
On the other, you're absolutely right. But on the other hand, if the referee's not sure whether to send the player off or not, give him a red card. If he gives him a red card, that happens anyway.
Yeah, true.
And if he stopped him giving him a red card and giving him a blue card because he's not quite sure, then that won't happen for quite so long, because so often you see that a game is spoilt by a red card early in the match.
That's true. So this was tried already in a grassroots level, I think, and apparently with good success. Yeah. I'm just not sure if that's okay until a semi-pro level, for example. And then when you get to the top level, it's if this format is really applicable.
And and the people that are at fault for a lot of these things are the players and the managers.
Yeah.
Because they will try and get people sent off. They will try and get people a blue card. They will play act and do all sorts of things. So the people that are often moaning about it are the people that cause the problems, and that's often the players.
Yeah.
Now, Jules, we won't see the Brazilian under-23 team at the Olympics this summer.
No.
What's about?
Yeah, if you wanted to go to Paris for the Olympics and watch the football tournament.
Who wants to go to Paris?
Who? You and I, for sure. You won't see Brazil, who won the last two Olympic Games, by the way, for the men's, in the men's tournament. They were knocked out on Sunday night in the South American qualifying tournament, if you want, against Argentina, who scored late to win 1-0, and Argentina then booked their place for the Olympic tournament, and no Brazil. So,
and it's something they take very, very seriously.
Yeah, they love it, and usually as well. I mean, we saw Neymar taking part even when he was over 23, because you're allowed three players who are over 23, and there's a lot of big players who want to be part in that, like Kylian Mbappe, for example. So I'm sure the Brazilians would have had a very talented squad, and I don't know who the over 23s would have been, the three players. But you could have probably had Vini if you wanted, for example, you know, those kind of guys. It won't be the case. I think it's a real shame, even for the Olympic Games in itself, not to have Brazil there. And for the Brazilians, who obviously cannot go for a three-peat and go three in a row at the Olympics, I guess maybe if you're France, Argentina, Spain,
they might be too disappointed.
Exactly. You get more chances to go and win it. Stu, that's all we have time for today. Thank you so much again for all your knowledge, all your expertise on the show.
It's absolute pleasure, as I said, as always.
To have you on. We'll be back on Thursday with Stu as well, I think, on Thursday together.
I will be on Thursday, yeah.
Yeah, to debrief and review all the Champions League action, because this week Champions League is back, of course, so we've got some big games. Until then, as Gab always say, love the game, love your neighbour, love yourself, or something like that.